3, 2, Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio of reason and independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, December 9th, 2007. It is now about 8:01 Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call in to 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. At other times, you may call 903-551-2186 and leave a voice message. Of course, you may send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com, and we'll try to respond to your questions during our very next broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from your... You may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, my2centsonline.com. That's my2centsonline.com, and that's a numeric 2. He discusses economic issues, how they affect you, and it is important that you be informed today and during these financial tumultuous times, or tumultuously financial times, I should say. Either one applies. He also has a commentary on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/my2cents. Please listen in to Andy. He has some very, very interesting things to say that will be to your advantage if you listen in. This evening, we will have an interview with Jim Burns. He is a candidate for the Libertarian Party for president of the United States, not the Libertarian Party. Jim is a very colorful figure. I believe he's on the air now. Let's put him on the line and let's find out more about him. And we do encourage you to call 646-652-4620. Okay? Please call in. Good evening. This is Liberty Talk Radio. You're on the air.
Hello, Joe. How are you today?
Fine. Who's calling?
This is Jim Burns.
Jim Burns, thank you so much for calling in. You're right on cue. I just introduced you. And thank you for calling in. Folks, on the line, we have Jim Burns. He is one, I guess, of several, right, Jim, who are running for the position of nomination for the position of president of the United States under the Libertarian Party. Is that correct?
I believe we have about 10 or so. I'm not completely sure.
Well, there were about 13 at one time. I guess a few dropped out. I know Christine Smith has been very active, and she needs to make a decision as of December 31st whether or not she'll continue to run. I guess it's very expensive and very arduous. Jim, I'm going to allow you some freedom to give our listeners an idea of who you are and why you are running and why you are taking on this Herculean task of running for president, especially under the Libertarian Party. So I'll give you some free rein for a while. I may interrupt you with some questions, but just go ahead.
Okay, great. You know, Joe, I think that I should be, I really should be president, and I believe that I will be. Now, the reason that I believe that I should be is that I believe that most of us should believe, and I believe that you do believe, that it's not the messenger, but the message that counts. The message that I bring is that we have it within our power to implement the second libertarian revolution. And I believe that I know what tools we need and how we can achieve the second libertarian revolution. Now, when I say I should be president, will be president, what I mean is that a libertarian who knows what I know and will do what I will do should and will be president. For now, we'll just use me as the example.
Okay.
To implement the second libertarian revolution, we need four things. We need to win the presidency. The second thing, and we need friends. We need 34 United States senators. We need a compass. We need libertarianism as the compass. And we need a map, the United States Constitution. Now, we need to have the 34 senators because without them, when I refuse to enforce anti-libertarian edicts of Congress, the House will impeach and the Senate will remove me from office. But with the 34 senators, I will not be removed and no law will be passed over my veto. The compass of libertarianism is best expressed in the words of Frederick Bastiat when he said, quote, "When law and force keep a person within the bounds of justice, they impose nothing but a mere negation. They oblige him only to abstain from harming others. They violate neither his personality, his liberty, nor his property. They safeguard all of these. They are defensive. They defend equally the rights of all. To implement the second libertarian revolution, all we need to do is apply the libertarian compass to the map of the United States Constitution. All we need to do is require that the U.S. government not impose on the rights of the people. All of the imposing on the rights of the people done by the federal government is through the office of the President of the United States. When I am president, I will just say no. With our friends in the Senate, I will not be removed from office, and my vetoes will be will stand. On that first day, I will be able to, number one, order all U.S. forces home to the United States in an economic and safe approach. I will maintain U.S. forces within the United States with the overwhelming ability to protect the people within the United States. Thanks to the blessings of the Second Amendment, we will be able to keep the America safe from any foreign invasion and drastically reduce the size and the expense of the military. I will adopt a non-interventionist foreign policy, which includes free trade and the peace, prosperity, and progress that free trade brings. On that day, I will abolish the personal income tax. And on that day, I will abolish the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Education, and the Department of Labor. On the day I become president, I will abolish the FEC, the DEA, the EPA, the OSHA, and all the rest of the nonsense of the alphabet soup of the federal government. I will make Social Security and Medicare voluntary. I will abolish legal tender laws. Registration for the draft will be abolished. I sometimes simply cannot help myself. I often speak the obvious. With the implementation of the second libertarian revolution, we shall take the next step on the road to peace, prosperity, and progress for ourselves and the people of our planet." How are you doing, Joe?
Well, I'm doing fine, Jim. I love what you said. I could not agree with you more on every aspect. I guess my frustration as a long-term libertarian is the message to me is simple. It's truly what the people want if they understood it. How do we convert that philosophy to some sort of pragmatism where you trump the ideology that is taught in school these days, where people are led to believe that they are actually subjects of the government and they are not the government? How do we do that? My frustration is, how do we make that conversion process? And I agree with absolutely everything that you have said, and as I espouse those principles on the air. I've been doing that for some time. My frustration is getting people to understand the concept of what you're saying?
Well, Joe, you know, I think that we've already succeeded. You know, the first thing we need to do is to understand the ball game and how it's played. We don't need to convince the vast majority of people. We need to convince a large portion, and we've already done that. According to polls, it shows that approximately 30% of the people find what we have to say very fascinating. Now, the problem is transferring those opinions into votes.
Yes.
That's what we haven't been able to do.
That's correct.
And I think that I have a system that we can do that. So it's in two parts. The first thing is we have to change our image. Right now we're perceived as being irrelevant. And the fact of the matter is, on the electoral scene, we are. We don't affect
that is
the
correct.
Outcomes,
that
the
is correct, yeah.
Okay. What I suggest is we change that. And as a step one, and I think there's two steps to do this. First is step one. We have to change how we are perceived. And the way to do that is to affect the outcome of the elections. Now, if you understand the way our elections are set up, and I'm sure you do, the deal is the legislatures use a thing called gerrymandering.
Right.
And with gerrymandering, they give themselves, the party in power gives themselves the advantage. And they want to do this in as many elections as they can, so they make districts where they have the advantage, but the advantage isn't all that big.
That's
but
correct.
If you challenge, it's a winner-take-all system we have. So
that's correct.
If somebody challenges and you don't win, then you lose all the money that you had invested in the process.
Right.
For example, if you just lose by one vote, you lose all the millions of dollars that you spent. You know, it just goes down the drain. And so that once a person becomes an incumbent, his advantage increases, and therefore he doesn't even attract challengers because they would be hard pressed to overcome the advantage that he has. And it grows with the incumbency. When it first starts out, the advantage isn't so large, but then it becomes larger as you go along. Okay, it's clear as mud so far. Do you have any questions, Joe?
Oh no. In fact, we had.
Well, let me continue then.
Yeah, please do, because I want to discuss that further, because I think that's important for our listeners to understand. But can you please do?
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is, if you have a close race, just a few percentage points, just a few votes. If you'll notice back in the Gore Bush race, it was settled with less than 1,000 votes in Florida. Now, surely we could have gotten 1,000 votes. We could have gotten 1,000 votes from George Bush if we had so decided to do so. But the fact of the matter is, we don't. We just run our campaigns. We don't target our voters. We just go out there and try to do it the same way that the Democrats and Republicans do it. What I'm suggesting we do is we find races that are close, and we determine who we want to win. And what we do is we use direct mail, and we send brochures or issue statements to, and we do them well, of course, and we send them to the people we want to take votes away from, you know, whether it's Democrats if we want the Republican to win or Republicans if we want the Democrat to win. And we ask people to vote for us, and we give them good libertarian reasons to do so.
Right.
And we don't need to get 50% of the vote. For example, say we wanted to influence the election in the favor of the Republicans. What we could do is we could send direct mail to Democrats advocating the decriminalization of drugs. Now, that might not get us the majority of people we send postcards to, but it would get us a percentage of the vote. Now, if we take votes that away from, that's the second best thing as to getting votes for yourself. So if we take 1,000 votes and the race was win within 1,000 votes, we would cause a different outcome of the election. That's the basic theory.
Well, William Redpath was on the air a few weeks ago, and his philosophy is that we should change the system similar to the way it is in some European countries, where instead of voting for a person, if people vote for a party. And I believe that's the way it works. So if we get 5% of the vote, then we have 5% representation in Congress.
The problem, Joe, is that we don't have the influence to change the electoral.
That's correct. All right, we have that.
We have to deal with what we have.
I agree with you. I mean, it's very, very frustrating in the state of Oklahoma where we're attempting to change ballot access. You may be familiar with that. It's
right.
Archaic and draconian the way they do things around here. And it's almost maddening. It's almost impossible to run. In fact,
the Libertarian Party has succeeded in running in Oklahoma for the presidency, at least.
That is, on
several occasions.
Yeah,
it's
that is
very,
correct.
Very,
in fact,
very
that,
difficult.
Right. The last time a registered Libertarian was recognized as was in the 2000 general election. That was the last time. And then we lost it because we didn't get the percentage of votes that were required by law. Anyway, now... But how do we implement what you were saying? How do we focus? How do we funnel, you know, our energy, our national energy? Should we focus take our national energy and say we are going to go after a particular district, congressional district, a particular senatorial race, either it be a state or U.S. And use the libertarian resources nationwide to at least elect one libertarian into office and take it one at a time, because there are so many offices that elections in Oklahoma, about half of them go uncontested altogether.
Yes, and the reason for that is the fact that if you run for office and you don't win, all the money that you've expended, you just lose.
Right, you lose the whole thing. You don't get a percentage. I mean, it's like the way it is. But I guess I don't understand how you're going to implement your process.
Okay,
and be successful.
What I suggest is we do it a two-step process. The first thing we do is we affect the outcome of the elections. Okay. And the way you do that is you find races that are close.
Okay.
And I'm getting a little bit of feedback, but you find races where the it's going to be close. You know, you'll have national polls that'll tell you, say, New Mexico is going to be close. So we go to New Mexico and we find out, we find out if it is close within our range, and then we pick a side and we go with the opposite side. In other words, we try to win. Democrat votes if we want to influence it towards the Republican, and Republican votes if we want to try to influence it towards the Democrat. And then we send out brochures to those people. We target them. In other words, you can, in most states, it's people register to vote by a political party. I don't know if that's how they do it in Oklahoma, but they do it in most places where if you register to vote, you identify yourself. So
right.
What we'll do is we'll take the voter list, and we'll send it to the people that we want to influence. And in the last race in New Mexico, it could have the election could have been influenced toward to switch sides with just a few hundred votes, and we can get a few hundred votes,
right,
taking them away from the person we want to influence.
Right.
And we do that by doing polling and finding out who. Now, the big advantage about doing this is once we've established that we can do this, it will be the Democrats and the Republicans who will want to finance our campaigns. So, one of our serious problems is raising money. And then once the next best thing to winning the election is to being able to determine who does win the election. And
well,
that's what
I guess,
talking about doing.
Yeah, I guess I'm confused in one area, and maybe I'm just, my brain is not functioning tonight. I'm awfully sorry, Jim, but... when you say we influence an election, are you inferring that we not run someone for office for that election?
No, absolutely, we run somebody.
Run somebody. Okay, run somebody for office.
What we do is
under the Libertarian name.
Pardon me?
Under Libertarian Party.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. Now.
That's the whole point.
Right. Oh, okay. I didn't know whether or not you were inferring that we should. Vote as a bloc as Libertarian Party and influence that particular election and say, ha-ha, we got you. But
No. What you're trying to do is you're trying to influence the election by taking votes away from somebody that the person who was wanting you want to get elected couldn't possibly get.
Right.
For example, libertarians can be both conservatives. We can out-conservative the conservatives.
That's correct.
And we can out-liberal the liberals.
That's correct.
We can out-green the greens.
Right.
If we just pick an issue and stick to it, and if we target a particular audience, now we're not going to get all of their votes, but we'll get some. And if we get enough, we could influence the election. That's what now, I'm saying.
Yeah, but are you inferring there that we not win the election, but we take the election away from the person who was favored to
we
win?
We cannot win the election at the present time because we do not have enough resources. But
right.
We have enough resources to affect the election.
But so you want to affect the election. So instead of a Republican, for example, who was intended to win in this case, he doesn't win, the Democrat wins, but they know the Democrat won because the Libertarians took the votes away. Is this what you're saying?
Yes, basically.
Okay. But the Libertarian still gets 3% of the vote or something like that.
Yes. No, we can do this with just 3 to 5%
Yeah, 3 to 5% of the vote. Right. Okay. Now, all right. Now, translate that to me. Let's assume we're successful. We garner 5% of the vote. The town favorite loses. The runner up wins. The Republican Party, in this case, just for example, recognizes that had it not been for those SOB libertarians, they would have won again. How does that put us in any favor? I mean, how does that help us?
Well, it makes us, I don't like to use this particular term, but it makes us kingmakers. In other words, we're not winning the election ourselves, but we determine who does, and that's a great
deal
of power.
That's correct, right.
And it also makes, they have to take us seriously. The reason we don't get any press or any coverage is because we cannot affect the outcome of the election.
That is correct, right.
Now, if it's a horse race and we can determine who wins, they're going to want to know what we're about. They're going to want to talk to us more. That will increase our credibility.
Okay.
And if enough people understand that if you want your candidate to win, you better make sure that the libertarians don't oppose you in the race. In other words, there's no libertarian in your race, or that the libertarian is on your side in order for you to win. There's a great deal of power in that, because
right.
if you're going to determine the outcome of the election, why you would have to buy us, or you wouldn't be able. You would have to make sure that we have the resources, or you wouldn't be able to win, and you would waste all of your resources if you're not able to win.
Right,
so it would be very important for them to make sure that we get what we need.
How do you know you're not going to take votes away from the person that you're trying to influence to win? In that
well,
case,
well, for example, if you want the Democrat to win, what you do is you send things to. Republican.
Oh, I see. So you're just targeting that particular list. Okay, now I got you. Okay,
right.
I'm with you.
Vice versa.
Okay. Now.
Now, once you build credibility, then you switch the thing a little bit. Once you have enough money to be competitive with the Democrats and Republicans, you use the same strategy towards the Democrats and Republicans. In other words, you bring in a Green Party candidate or a Constitution Party candidate, and you have them attract votes from the Democrats and Republicans, so you split the votes.
Right.
So you make it a five-way race instead of a three-way race, and you have two of the candidates going after the established party, and that means that you only have to get 30% of the vote to win.
Okay, I'm with you. If we're going to go, if taking that approach, that strategy. And using those tactics that you espouse, why not then just run as a Blue Dog Democrat or a Libertarian Republican?
Okay, well, there's a lot of problems with that. For example, with Ron Paul, for example.
Yeah.
Ron Paul is doing better than any Libertarian has ever done before.
Correct.
God bless him. I'm all in favor of him. If he gets a nomination, there's other things that we could do to help him.
Right.
But it's going to be difficult to get the. It's more difficult to get the nomination, to get votes in the nomination process of the Democrats and Republicans than it is to run heads up against them in the election. Look at the amount of money that's raised by the Republicans, for example, just the
right.
top tier Republicans. They're raising so much more than Ron Paul is raising that it's difficult for him to be competitive. And the same thing in the Democratic Party. If one aspect of a percentage that we could like is the fact that he's anti-war, but his ability to do anything is just he doesn't have a very good capability of doing anything.
Well,
so what I'm suggesting is that You know, the general election gives us more time to influence the election, and we're already there.
Yeah.
If we run as a blue dog Democrat, what do we? How do we? How do people know that we're libertarians, except from what we tell them?
Well, if you want
to, that's why I left the Republican Party.
Yeah, I know. Well, so did I. So did I. Well, I guess what I was thinking about is if for example, if a person would run as a libertarian Republican. Every time they gave a speech, you know, in all the debates, they would say, "I'm a libertarian Republican," and the person may not win, but as far as influence is concerned, aren't you better off getting maybe 10, 20, 30% in a primary and not winning, rather than trying to influence votes in the general election?
Joe, you have to use different tactics for different situations. Now,
correct.
I can understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma, it's just terrible to get on the ballot.
Right.
So in your case, you would probably have to use different tactics.
Right.
For example, it might be better to, until you can get the Libertarian Party the right to be on the ballot, it might be better to become a Blue Dog Republican or a Blue Dog Democrat.
Right.
I would pick, if I were doing that, I would pick the party that is the larger party because... you know, what good is it do to win the nomination if you can't win the election?
Right.
So, you know, if it's dominated by Democrats, you try to keep running in Democratic primaries until you find a hole.
Right.
You know, a place that's viable and you can stand a chance to win. I'm not opposed to, I don't believe, it's not party labels that counts, it's the message. But I think...
Absolutely.
That over the long run, however, we would be much better off with a libertarian party. That's why I bucked from the Republican Party, because the Republican Party doesn't really stand for anything.
That's correct.
You know, when people vote for it, they vote for it for a variety of reasons, but it's not as a matter of principle.
Right.
You know, if you had a party, you got a party with Giuliani and, you know, just look at the field, you know, they don't really stand for it.
They're not very homogeneous, are they?
Right. No, they're not. And the deal is, if you and I'm afraid that that's beginning to be the case in the Libertarian Party as well, because I've looked at the websites and not many of them are libertarians.
Correct.
But be that as it may, I'm sure we'll weed that up as we go along.
Well, now I'm certain you have hundreds of millions of dollars to throw towards your campaign.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So how are you?
I'm not. Go ahead.
No. Then the question is, how are you going to influence anyone to vote for you if you don't have the financial resources to do so? I guess the same thing goes for Christine Smith, who's a diehard, and I only pick on Christine. There's Phillies and there's several others. The only one with money who calls himself a libertarian that is not is Michael Imperato, who is running under the libertarian name, but he's no more libertarian than Giuliani is. I mean, so, but he's got plenty of money. Everyone else is, you know, your average person, basically, who is looking for funding for their campaign, but it's just not there. So, how do you stack up with that, Jim?
Well, I don't have a lot of money. And if you take a look at the rules and regulations of the federal government and an election law, they stack it against people who don't have money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right.
The way they've got it set up, I've received, I've requested the information from them, you know, their rules, regulations, orders, controls, edicts, and it just makes me want to pull the single hair that I have on the top of my head out. you know, they just irritate me so much I can't even... force myself to read all of it. You know, I've read, I skimmed enough, and I found that if you don't spend $5,000, you don't have to file any forms with them.
Correct.
So I'm not going to take contributions at this time. And if another thing that's really terrible about these rules is that you're required if you start to make reporting requirements. In other words, once you raise $5,000, you're required to have a treasurer.
Right.
Now this treasurer is required. Is liable for all of the to make sure that you comply with all the rules, regulations, controls, and edicts that the FEC puts forth. And if you don't, it's the treasurer who has to is personally, in other words, they can go to jail, and not only can they go to jail, their property is liable if they own anything at all. the government will go to them first and steal everything that they have. Agency can be arbitrary. So I'm not going to subject anybody to being a treasurer until we have enough resources. For example, if I receive the Libertarian Party nomination, then we would go ahead and hire a treasurer. But until that time, I'm not going to take any funds. I'm going to self-finance this, and I'm going to go around the country. I'm retired, and I have a small bit of money, enough to go around the country and talk
okay.
to people.
Now,
what I really need to do is to build a cadre of people who are interested in doing the projects that I have in mind, and if they'll take the time to go to my website and read the whole thing, they'll find that I have a plan, and I need help. I need about 10 people. Have you ever heard that old song about, give me 10 men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the rights they adore, you know, and then I'll give you 10,000 more? Well, that's the type of thing that I need.
Right.
We need to have a campaign management team put together with all the resources that I talked to you about before, and we can, once I get that, then we'll be able to do quite a bit.
Well, most libertarians who are vying for the nomination philosophically are on the same page for the most part. They're not too far apart from one another.
I found that not to be totally true at this particular race. I only think there's around 3, possibly 4 people who are consistent libertarians who are in the race at the present time.
And so how do you intend to trump the other ones who are basically philosophically on the same page with you?
Well, the strategy. I don't think that they're advocating doing the things that I advocate doing.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying that they're bad people. They're great people. Anybody who goes around and supports liberty is a good person, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a selfless thing.
We can do things we've never done before.
Right. All right, let's talk about some of the issues. What do you think is the hottest issue we have right now?
Well, the war is something. I think that we need to adopt a non-interventionist foreign policy because the people are just simply not competent. Nobody can know enough, have enough information, and know what the results of their actions will be well enough to be engaging in these activities. I think that we need a non-interventionist foreign policy. And by that, I don't mean a isolationist foreign policy. I mean a non-interventionist foreign policy.
Right.
For example, the elections that they're running in Russia right now. I think that they're fixed, and I think that they're not. It's not a real good thing. I'm not a real big fan of Putin. Much prefer the chess player. But the idea is that the United States government shouldn't interfere in these things at all.
Right.
We should adopt the foreign policy of George Washington. The idea that we should have friendly relations with all nations and entangling alliances with none. But the foreign policy that we've been using. The one of force, for example, the invasions in both Iraq and Afghanistan, were acts of war. And we did this in direct violation of the United States Constitution, which requires if you go to war, you have to declare war. Now, there's many good reasons for doing that. If you declare war, then you have to have good reason to do that. In other words, you have to show that you've been attacked, that aggression has been done to you. Now, if you do that, well, then, once you do declare war on those people, then we have treaties with almost all the countries in the world. And that obliges them to join with us. You wouldn't have had the nonsense we had in Iraq where the French and the Germans were saying bad things about us and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And refused to join with us. If we declared war, they would either honor their treaties with us or they wouldn't. And if they didn't, well, then they wouldn't have treaties with us anymore.
That's correct, yeah. You know,
that's the way to handle that.
What boggles, well, I think it all comes down to indoctrination. The American people have been indoctrinated. I can't tell you how many times I have conversations with people. And these are educated people, unfortunately. And they say, well, you know, if we don't go to Iraq, who will? I mean, that's the thinking. If we don't, who will? Well, no one. That's the point. That's the point. We don't want anyone to go in there, and we can buy their oil and they can buy our products and everyone's making money and everyone's happy. But they can't think that way.
Well, the thing about it is, with our interference, what we're doing is we're making enemies. They would have no reason to fly airplanes into the World Trade Center if we weren't in Mecca.
Right.
You know, there's consequences for the actions that we take.
Right.
For example, I have to show you my age. When I was growing up, we had a thing, I almost joined the Marine Corps over this one, the Cuban Missile Crisis. What we'd done is we had supported a dictator named Batista who was suppressing the people, and there was a rebellion led by Castro.
Right.
And that's what we caused. We caused Castro because of our support for Batista.
But we
caused the Ayatollah because of our support for the Shah of Iran.
Right.
We got to stop doing that stuff because we can't support dictators. We can't support anybody outside of the United States. Now, this is not to say that there isn't tragedy going on in the world. For example, the genocide going on in Darfur and other places. People of good conscience might want to do something about it. If they do, let them, is my view, and let them do it at their own risk and for their own reward.
Right.
If they want to send money or if they physically want to go, they do so at their own risk, and God love them. But if the United States government should be completely neutral about this, we shouldn't be engaged in this at all. There's nowhere in the Constitution does it give the authority to the people to do this, and there's a good philosophical reason for us not to.
Well, you had mentioned that we should bring our military home in an economic and safe approach. When you say economic and safe approach, how do you define that?
Well, I don't think that we should leave tanks laying around, and I don't think that we should, leave valuable things. We've got a whole bunch of real value out there in the world, and we got to bring it home.
Oh, we have, we have millions of acres of real estate all over the world, and they're all military bases.
Real estate, you leave. That doesn't belong to us.
Right. I don't mean that, but I mean basically we are.
But say
occupying real estate, millions of acres of real estate all over the world.
Pardon me?
We're occupying real estate, I should say.
Yes, and we shouldn't not do that. For example, we shouldn't. It's my belief that we shouldn't have embassies anywhere in the world. We shouldn't have embassies. What we should have is consulates, and we should hire the people who live there to operate those. For example, what happened to us in Iran, I don't know if you remember, well, I don't know how old you are, Joe.
Oh, I'm older than you are, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think so. We're both pushing the envelope, let's put it that way. The situation in Iran was that they were able to, they committed acts of war against us because the property that they were going after, the property that they seized, was the U.S. Embassy in Iran.
Right.
Right? That was U.S., they committed war against us. The reaction we should have had was to declare war back and do something about it. But the way to stop that is to not have embassies at all, and that way they can't attack American property.
Right. Let's.
And,
yeah.
You should remember that they were agitated because we were granting amnesty and support to the Shah of Iran at the time.
Right. Another brutal dictator. Right.
And all sorts against their own.
You know, if they're not brutal dictators, we don't support them. And let's be honest. I mean, we just love those guys.
The government of the United States does, and it's
that's correct. That's what I meant. That's right.
So.
Right. What is your opinion of the right to choose or the abortion issue?
Okay. The thing about it is that I favor a woman's right to choose. However, I don't believe that it's a federal issue. I find nowhere in the Constitution that the federal government has any jurisdiction over this issue at all. So the United States government, in my opinion, shouldn't decide about this. However, if you take a look at our system the way it is, the courts made a decision. Now, the courts can release people from jail. So right now, it's impossible for any state body to totally abolish abortion within the United States because of what the Supreme Court says. So that's got nothing to do with what the president says. Now, if you're talking about what I would do as president, I would. It's not a federal issue, in my opinion. In other words, I wouldn't have any opinion about it at all as if I'm president of the United States. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Well, how do you respond to that if you were on
network TV, and they said, "Well, what about
protecting the unborn, if you will? How would you approach that issue?"
Okay, my position is that I'm pro-choice, but I don't believe that it's a federal issue because I find nowhere in the Constitution that there's the authority of the federal government to decide on this issue at all. Right.
Then who should decide on that issue?
Should be a state's issue.
A state issue, okay. Then
the thing about it is, the advantage about the Constitution is that it gives us a system where you have limited power at the federal level, and then you have limited power at the state level. But you have different issues. For example, let me run this parallel with the 18th Amendment. The federal government, much to the chagrin of libertarians and people of good sense, decided to enact prohibition with the 18th Amendment, and they made it a federal law that you couldn't sell alcohol or drink it or whatever. All right, that made it for everybody that they couldn't do that. Then they had the good sense to repeal it with the 21st Amendment. All right, then it's still, if you look around, I'm sure, I think Oklahoma is one of the places where in certain counties it's against the law to sell alcohol.
Right.
On certain days or they have what they call dry counties.
Right.
They have them mostly in the Midwest and South. There's no dry counties in Las Vegas, in Nevada. We're a little bit more liberal-minded in that particular area. But, we kind of laugh at those things here. But they're quite serious within certain communities. Now, the thing is, if you allow for different jurisdictions to have different laws, then people can vote with their feet, and they can move to a county that's dry, if that's what they believe in.
Okay.
And you don't have to have all these things shoved down the throats of people. You allow them more liberty.
Right. Well,
to live in the society that they want.
Yeah. So when you say the state level, actually, you mean the local level, actually.
State and local level.
State and local. Okay. And closer to the local level as possible.
Yeah, the closer you can get to the government, the better off you are.
Right.
You should, anybody who's passing any kind of laws ought to have to be able to look you in the eye.
Right.
Tell you you can't smoke or whatever, and you blow smoke right in their face.
Right. The current issue of the subprime mortgage debacle, the SIVs, the CDOs, and all this other stuff that's going on, what's your opinion there? What should be done, if anything?
Well, the problem with it is it's all regulated by the government. And I don't know if you remember Ringo Starr.
Yes, I do. In fact, he was after my time.
Pardon me?
He was after my time.
After? You mean...
I'm a doo-wopper, but from the 1950s, that's how far back I go. I sang doo-wop back in the 1950s, so that dates me.
Well, I was a little kid back in the 1950s, but right. Still... The idea is that the way to solve this problem is just to take the governmental regulations just right on out, and the way to do that is to eliminate the legal tender laws.
Right.
And if you do that, then you can have competing currencies, and once you have competing currencies, the good will drive out the bad.
Right.
If you don't have competing currencies, the bad drives out the good.
Right. And right now we have kind of the bad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we have the kind of...
They just keep making the problems worse.
Right.
Let me go into another area for you, the idea of mandatory insurance. The reason we have the need for insurance now is because they've made medicine so expensive, and they've made medicine so expensive over government regulation. We already have socialized medicine in this country. If they pass a bill to make a... make it mandatory that everybody has insurance, and they subsidize it. What they'll do is they'll just make matters worse. It's not going to get better; it's going to get worse. When I was growing up, we didn't have insurance because, as a kid, I didn't have insurance. Nobody that I knew had insurance. Very few of the adults had insurance. But medicine was a great deal cheaper back then. You could I got stabbed once when I was a kid. I got, I got hit by a car, and I got, several times that I had to go in. I had my tonsils taken out, but every time you went, it was something that my dad could afford to pay.
That's correct. I remember those days.
Right. point that you could afford to pay for it. And even then it was highly regulated. The doctors, I hate to say this, but doctors are, it's like businessmen. They're businessmen, and no businessman is friends of freedom. They're generally not. What they want is special privilege for themselves, and they want to keep others out of the market.
Right.
So what you have to do is you have to eliminate that. All the excuses given by the medicine establishment is to make themselves in a monopoly. You shouldn't have the government on any level shouldn't tell who can practice and who can't practice, who can engage in voluntary activities between consenting adults, for example.
Right.
The government, there shouldn't be a law about practicing medicine without a license. You shouldn't need a license to practice medicine. There are other ways to have reputable medicine without a license.
Well, it, obviously, it would become self-regulating because if
yeah, you'd have associations.
You have associations, and they say, well, if this person is not...
law to impose their will upon other people.
That's right.
They would have to, through reputation, they would have to have credibility with the public.
Yeah. The how do you feel about Roe versus Wade?
Okay, I think it was bad law because I don't think that the federal government excuse me, has jurisdiction over over the matter. But, you know, that's what the courts decided.
Yeah.
You need, you know, if you have different justices, that's nothing we can influence unless we happen to be president of the United States and then who it is that we select and whether we can get Congress to approve of the people we select.
Okay. So. All right. Right now we spend about... $3 billion plus a year that we give to Israel. If we didn't give that money to Israel, if there's a consensus that possibly that nation state would cease to exist, how would you handle that situation?
Well, I feel that we should not give any money to anybody because the only way the federal government can give money to anybody is they got to take it away from somebody else.
That's correct.
They can't. They don't. Government money is not a breast milk. It doesn't automatically come up. You have to take it from some people to give it to other people.
Right.
Now, those who say, well, we must protect Israel, let them put their money where their mouth is. If they feel that that's an important issue, that this particular government is so much better than others, that that it needs to be supported, well, then let them support it. But don't let them use force to require everybody else to.
Right. Homeland Security.
Okay, I would... the best protection the United States government, the people of the United States, have against terrorism is the United States Constitution. We need to enforce the United States Constitution, and that means we got to get rid of the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security. There's no place for it.
But how does that work without federal intervention? For the sake of our listeners, please. I mean, I'm with you on that one, but I'm not sure if our listeners would be.
You mean how does it protect us against terrorists?
Right.
It removes their reason for wanting to attack us.
Okay, very good. Okay. And if there was still someone, a residual group, that wanted to attack us, and there was no Homeland Security or no centralized, I guess, CIA or whatever.
It would be a small group of people, and they would be criminals. And we have ways to deal with criminals.
Okay.
We have law enforcement. And that's what it should be done. That's the way it should be handled. You don't need to wiretap everybody in the world to protect the citizens of the United States, especially if the United States government is not interfering in the. If we're over there, then why? If we're not over there, why would they be concerned about it?
Right,
we
agree.
We wouldn't be influencing their lives.
The
except through trade.
Torture during time of war.
No, torture is not acceptable.
Not acceptable. Okay. The issue of, I mean, you said legal tender acts. I'm just running through my mind of all the issues that I think, because the issues that are brought up during both the Democrat and Republican debates, to me, are non-issues. You know, when they ask Barack Obama, is he black enough? I don't think that's a major issue as far as I'm concerned. But they don't seem to want to discuss issues of liberty or freedom. They want to discuss issues of legislation. That is my concern, and then that's what people get fed, and that's what they believe presidents should do. They should legislate, which only leads to more restrictions of our freedom and liberty.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Right. Where do you part company with Ron Paul, for example?
Not very much. About the only issue that I know of off the top of my head is the... I'd have to read all of his papers, which I have not done, but the only issue is the abortion issue.
Okay. Immigration.
I believe that the major problem we have with immigration is the fact that you have inconsistent law enforcement and you don't have the old assimilation. I believe that we need a, excuse my French, but we need a liberal policy towards immigration. It should be easy for people to get a green card. All they should need to do is to prove that they don't have contagious diseases, and we should issue green cards to anybody who wants them, so long as they, when they, the acceptance of the green card would create a contract, and the part of the contract would be that they wouldn't take any government money, for example, welfare programs and
okay.
that sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
And what they should do is they should know that they have to follow the laws of the United States. They shouldn't go around robbing, raping, and murdering people. And if they do, that's ground, that is grounds upon conviction of being deported. And that they should understand that they don't have the right to vote. And you know, until they obtain citizenship. And part of the we ought to have a liberal policy towards citizenship in that once they've been here for a certain period of time, it should be established, you know, 4 or 5 years or whatever, and they've shown good behavior and they've shown that they've been an upright person, well, then they should be allowed to apply for citizenship, and the process should be that they be required to speak English and know the how the federal government works and how their local government works. And once they pass that test, then they should become citizens.
All right. Now, how do we take the millions of people, hundreds of thousands of new people who come in every year, and confirm that they do not have contagious diseases?
Okay, those are simple tests, this should be a process you should use private enterprise to take over. I don't really trust the government to.
Okay.
They're not really good at it. You know, if you hire corporations and you know, people would go into this business. Green card shouldn't cost more than $10 or $15. If you know, to get a green card shouldn't cost it that much.
Should the green card be issued by the federal government or by a private agency?
Yeah, it'd have to be issued by the federal government.
Okay.
That's a federal issue. It's in the Constitution.
Okay. And then how do they prove that they have no contagious disease? They have to go through a physical, and that would be done by
a physical. You know, somebody who's accepted via the testing board. You
yeah.
know, you should make it as open as possible. You know,
yeah.
almost any doctor should be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, verify that they're a doctor and whatever, you right. know, that they know about contagious diseases.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be required to take in people who have the bubonic plague, for example.
That's correct, right. And if there's a test for that, I don't know if there is, but, you know, I agree.
Sure.
You know, now... The major parties seem to latch on to this English only issue, you know, and that should be constitutional.
I think it should be required for citizenship, but I don't think it should be required for people to live here.
Okay.
And people should be allowed to do whatever they want to, but if they want to become part of the country, you know, this is part of the problem we have right now is there's no assimilation in there. And they're engaged in, the Democrats especially do this, and I know about this locally. We have a thing called the Culinary Union. It's about the only union but there's a lot of fraud going on with the voting. You know, the unions are getting these people to vote, and it's against the law. It should be a felony to because we don't want them to bring Mexico here, because Mexico stinks.
Right.
We don't want their government here.
Yeah.
So they have to assimilate a little bit, you know, and then they become a part of the country, and who cares what color they are?
But quite frankly, they really are assimilating. There's just a fraction that doesn't assimilate very well, gets all the press. People are leaving Mexico for a reason, and they're not leaving Mexico because it's such a great place to live. You're right. Mexico was probably a horrible country to live in. I know. I've been there. I have friends there. And some of them are attorneys, and all they do is fight the government all day to protect the people.
Yes, a third world country for a good reason, because they don't have a libertarian government or anything near it.
That is correct.
That's what makes a place prosperous to live in.
That is
correct. We have more, as terrible as it is here, we have more libertarian government here than there is anywhere else.
Right. Well, Jim, how are you going to promote your campaign? What venues are you going to be using?
Well, I'm going to be talking on your show. I hope I'll be able to talk again.
All right, very good. And you are welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, but I'll be going to Arizona tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I'll be addressing the Libertarian Party meeting there.
Okay.
In January, I just started out. You got my email. When was it? About a week and a half ago.
That's correct. Yeah.
Almost 2 weeks ago now.
Yes.
Well, all right. I've just started out since then.
All right.
My name hasn't even appeared in the LP news yet.
Okay.
So I'm going to be traveling around the country and trying to speak to as many people as I possibly can.
Yeah.
By the way, just for a commercial, you can look at my website at jimburnsforpresident.com.
Okay. Well, allow me to do this. Excuse me. I'm sorry for cutting it. Allow me to do this. We have only have about three more minutes to go. Why don't you take 2 minutes to inform our listeners how they can get in contact with you, with your campaign, and make your pitch? And why don't you go ahead? It's an open mic for you right now.
Okay, I'll tell you what. You can reach me at jimburnsforpresident.com. And the first thing you'll see that is on the day that I become president, I will order all United States military forces home in an economic and safe way. I will maintain our forces within the United States with the overwhelming ability to protect the people within the United States. I will adopt a non-interventionist foreign policy that includes free trade and the peace, prosperity, and progress that free trade brings. On that day, I will abolish the personal income tax. On that day, I will abolish the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Education, the Department of Labor. On the day I become president, I will abolish the FEC, the DEA, the EPA, OSHA, and all the rest of the federal government alphabet nonsense. I will make Social Security and Medicare voluntary. I will abolish legal tender laws. Registration for the draft will be abolished. Now, you can look me up at jimburnsforpresident.com. That's jimburnsforpresident.com. And then on that page, you'll find off to the left things that you can go to that I think are very interesting. I have quotes of interest. And on the quotes of interest, you'll find one of the first quotes says, "Everything of importance has been said before by somebody who did not discover it." That was Alfred North Whitehead. Margaret Mead once said that never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world.
Right.
Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. And, of course, Victor Hugo once said, "There is one thing stronger than all the armies of the world, and that is an idea whose time has come."
Right.
And to close the quotes, let me just say that never in the history of the world has there been a situation so bad that the government can't make it worse.
Jim, thank you so much for calling
in.
Same here, and you are invited back. We'll be in contact with you. Please feel free to contact me if you wish, and we'll set another date. Once your campaign gets rolling and we can get an update from you, we wish you luck. You are well-spoken. You are very erudite and succinct. Philosophically, you bat 100 with me, so I wish you all the luck in the world.
Well, you too, Joe, and I hope to meet you in person soon.
Same here. Thank you very much, Jim. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, that was Jim Burns. Wouldn't it be fabulous if he was our president? He certainly has a command of the philosophical philosophy of libertarianism and the meaning of freedom. He is the type of person we need in office, in every office throughout the land. So this concludes our live broadcast. We will be broadcasting live again Thursday morning at 6:30. We're going to have some very interesting subjects. We're going to have a multitude of subjects, in fact. So We hope that you will tune in at that time. Please send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. And now, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by... You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.